So I want you to just imagine something for a second. Imagine you get a letter in the mail, and it's a $50 fine from your homeowners association.
Oh, the dreaded HOA envelope.
Right. And it's for something completely ridiculous, like, I don't know, your trash can was left out on the curb for 2 hours too long.
Yeah, or your mailbox is painted a shade of beige that isn't on the officially approved beige list.
Exactly. You know the drill. I mean, it's annoying, it feels incredibly petty, but it happens all the time.
It really does.
But now I want you to imagine that this tiny $50 fine somehow leads you directly into this massive constitutional trap.
Right.
Like a trap that literally pits the executive and judicial branches of the United States government against each other.
It sounds wild, but yeah.
And somehow, at the end of this massive clash of government powers, it leaves you, the homeowner, holding an astronomical legal bill.
It genuinely sounds like the setup for, a paranoid legal thriller or something.
It totally does.
Like, you think you're just fighting over a trash can or some trim paint, and suddenly you are staring down the barrel of a fundamental breakdown in how our democracy is structured.
Yeah.
But this isn't fiction. We are talking about the actual foundational mechanics of how state government operates.
And what happens when the very structures that were explicitly designed to help everyday citizens end up like completely ensnaring them?
Exactly.
And that is exactly the mission of our deep dive today. We are going to explore how a completely well-intentioned government shortcut.
And it really was well-intentioned.
Right, it was purposefully built by a state legislature to help regular citizens save time and money. But we're looking at how it mutated into this bizarre, inescapable legal catch-22.
We have a seriously fascinating stack of source materials to get through today to uncover how this all happened.
We really do. We are looking at a very fiery, incredibly detailed legal motion from 2017.
It was filed in the Maricopa County Superior Court in Arizona, right?
Yeah, it's the case of R.L. Whitmer versus the Hilton Casitas Homeowners Association.
Such a crucial document.
Oh, absolutely. And we are also going to look at the foundational Arizona legislative bills that launched this entire experiment,
Right.
specifically House Bill 2824.
Right, the origin of the whole thing.
Exactly. And then to really understand the machinery of this bureaucracy, we are going deep into a vintage 2007 annual report from the Arizona Office of Administrative Hearings.
That report is a gold mine.
It really is. Okay, so let's unpack this. How in the world does a neighborhood fight over an HOA rule escalate into a full-blown constitutional standoff?
Well, to even begin to grasp the stakes here, you really have to look way beyond the specific property dispute that R.L. Whitmer found himself racked up in.
Right, because this isn't just about his specific HOA.
Exactly. Yes, our sources center on one specific incident in Arizona.
Yeah.
We'll definitely get into the weeds of that. But the underlying issue is so much bigger.
It's massive.
It's about the friction between the core branches of government. I mean, you have the executive branch, whose job is to administer and execute the laws. And then you have the judicial branch, whose job is to interpret those laws and, enforce them with real power.
Right.
So what happens when those two massive gears of government just collide head on?
Right. And crucially, for you listening at home, what happens when a regular person is caught in the middle?
Yeah, exactly. A homeowner who is literally just trying to follow the exact rules the state published for them, and they just get crushed between those grinding gears.
Because nobody wakes up and decides they want to trigger a constitutional crisis before breakfast, right?
No, definitely not.
So, to find out why R.L. Whitmer even found himself in this situation, we really need to go back to the origin story of this whole system.
A shortcut.
Yeah, the shortcut. Like, why wasn't he just in a regular courtroom to begin with? I mean, if I have a dispute, I sue someone in court. That's the American way,
I
right?
mean, that is the traditional route, absolutely.
Yeah.
But to understand why the state of Arizona created this entirely separate pathway, what they viewed as this revolutionary shortcut, we have to look at the legislative intent. And I think it's really important to state up front that the government didn't set this trap maliciously.
No, not at all.
There was no smoke-filled room of bureaucrats plotting to bankrupt homeowners. They were actually trying to solve a massive, undeniable problem that was ruining people's lives across the state.
And that problem was the HOAs themselves.
Exactly.
If we look at the 2006 Arizona House Bill 2824 and then later Senate Bill 1148, which came along in 2011, the legislature actually spelled spells the problem out perfectly.
They really didn't mince words.
No, they didn't. They realized that homeowners living in condominiums and planned communities were being subjected to, and I'm going to read a direct quote from the legislative findings here because it's just so validating for anyone who has ever hated their HOA.
Go for it.
They called it inconsistent, unreasonable, and often unlawful enforcement and application of the declarations, rules, and bylaws that govern their communities.
Wow. Unlawful enforcement.
Right. The state officially recognized that HOA boards and property managers were, in a lot of cases, just running completely amok.
What's fascinating here is the economic reality that the legislature was attempting to tackle.
The money side of it.
Yeah, because the fundamental issue wasn't merely that HOA boards were being petty or unreasonable about, you know, paint colors.
Right.
The real crisis was that regular working class or middle class people had absolutely no viable mechanism to fight back when the HOA crossed the line.
Because court is expensive.
Exactly. The legislature explicitly noted in the bill that homeowners are often unable to afford the cost of formally litigating their disputes in the superior court.
Wait, let me stop you right there, because I think a lot of people who haven't been involved in a full-blown lawsuit don't really grasp what formally litigating means in terms of hard dollars.
It's terrifying, honestly.
Right. Like, if I want to fight a $200 fine for painting my mailbox the wrong shade of beige, why can't I just, you know, walk down to the courthouse, stand in front of a judge, and explain myself?
Well, because the traditional civil justice system simply isn't built for that kind of casual interaction.
It's not like Judge Judy.
Not at all. If you want to challenge your HOA in superior court over that mailbox, you are entering a highly formalized, extremely expensive labyrinth.
So what's the first step?
Well, first, you have to pay court filing fees just to get your complaint on the docket.
Okay, that's a few hundred bucks.
Right. Then you have to officially serve the HOA with the lawsuit. And the HOA, which usually has a massive war chest of collected dues from your neighbors, will immediately hire a specialized law firm.
Oh, of course they will.
And that law firm is going to file a motion to dismiss your case. Now, unless you are a legal expert yourself, you have to hire your own attorney just to draft a response to their motion.
And attorneys aren't cheap. We're talking hundreds of dollars an hour, right?
Easily. $300-$400 an hour. And that's literally just the beginning.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. If you somehow survive the motion to dismiss, you enter the discovery phase.
The dreaded discovery.
Exactly. The HOA's lawyers will demand every email, every text message, every single document you've ever produced regarding mailboxes, paint colors, and neighborhood aesthetics.
That sounds exhausting.
It is. And they might depose you. Meaning you have to sit in a conference room with a court reporter while their lawyer grills you under oath for, like, 4 hours.
All over a mailbox.
Yep. And you might have to pay to depose the HOA president to get their side. Then come expert witnesses, summary judgment motions, and finally, maybe a year and a half later, a trial.
So what's the final bill on something like that?
You could easily spend $20,000 to $30,000 in legal fees.
Just to fight a $200 fine.
Exactly. The math is completely broken for the consumer.
Wow.
The traditional judicial system is too heavy, too reliant on procedural formality, and overwhelmingly too costly to handle these everyday community disputes.
And the HOAs had to have known this.
Oh, they definitely knew. They knew that no rational homeowner would ever spend $20,000 to fight a petty fine.
Which basically gave the HOAs unchecked, localized, authoritarian power.
Precisely.
So the state steps in and says, we need a shortcut. We need to save the homeowners. And they created what they explicitly called a limited alternative to the superior court. They decided to carve these specific HOA disputes out of the traditional judicial branch entirely.
And where did they move them?
They moved them over to the executive branch. The sources show they initially moved them to the Department of Fire, Building, and Life Safety.
Which is such a bizarre fit.
Right. Side note, it seems like a really weird place for an HOA dispute. Like, help, my neighbor's fence is an inch over the property line. Call the fire department.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense.
But later, in 2016, through Senate Bill 1530, they shifted it over to the Department of Real Estate, which makes a lot more sense.
Much better fit, yeah.
But regardless of the parent department, the actual venue where these hearings took place was the Office of Administrative Hearings, or the OAH.
And this is a critical distinction. It really sets up our entire constitutional problem later on.
How so?
Well, the OAH is an executive branch agency. It is comprised of administrative workers.
Hmm.
It is not part of the judicial branch.
No.
There are no black robes, no gavels, no Article III judges.
Just bureaucrats.
Exactly. And the legislature's intent in doing this was incredibly clear. They wrote into the bills that they wanted to provide an efficient use of already established common interest community expertise.
They wanted to specialize.
Right. They wanted to offer consumer protection without the expense, formality, and difficulty of requiring a trial in the Superior Court in every instance.
They essentially wanted a streamlined, bureaucratic solution to what was previously a complex civil legal problem.
That's exactly it.
Okay, let's break down the actual mechanics of this shortcut based on the source texts, because honestly, on paper, it sounds like an absolute dream for the consumer.
It really does sound perfect initially.
Under this new law, a homeowner who gets into a dispute with their HOA doesn't have to hire a high-priced litigator or worry about depositions.
Right. Skip all of that.
Instead, they just fill out a petition with the department. They pay a single filing fee.
And there's a really interesting detail about this fee in the sources, right?
Yeah. All the money collected from these petitions goes into a very specific dedicated state account called the Condominium and Planned Community Hearing Office Fund.
Right. It was designed to be a completely self-sustaining ecosystem.
Which makes sense.
Yeah. The taxpayers of Arizona who don't live in HOAs shouldn't have to pay to resolve disputes for people who do.
Yeah.
So the filing fees offset the administrative costs of running the system.
But the best part, the absolute kicker for the homeowner, is the reimbursement clause.
Oh, this is the best part.
The statute requires that if the homeowner wins their case, the administrative law judge, the ALJ, must order the HOA to reimburse that filing fee back to the homeowner.
It is designed to make the homeowner completely whole.
Which is amazing.
It drastically lowers the barrier to entry for seeking justice. You aren't navigating the treacherous waters of civil procedure in a superior court.
Right. You aren't doing the discovery and the depositions.
No. You are simply filling out a standardized government form, paying a set predictable fee, and presenting your evidence to an administrator whose entire job is to understand HOA bylaws.
I was trying to think of a good way to conceptualize this for everyone listening, and it really reminds me of an HR department or maybe an internal corporate mediator.
Oh, that's an interesting comparison.
Right. Imagine you have a severe dispute with a coworker at your office. You don't immediately drive down to the local precinct, call the actual police, and try to have your coworker arrested, right?
Well, hopefully not.
You go to HR. It's an internal, streamlined process designed to settle disputes quickly, cheaply, and quietly without having to invoke the terrifying, expensive machinery of the actual justice system.
Yeah.
The state legislature essentially built an HR department for Arizona's neighborhoods.
It's a very clean way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
But if we pull on that thread just a little bit, it reveals the structural weakness of the whole thing.
Okay, how so?
Because an HR department relies on a massive assumption: presumed compliance.
Presumed compliance, what do you mean?
It operates on the belief that once the HR director, or in this case, the administrative law judge, makes a final decision, both the employee and the coworker are going to respect that decision and abide by it.
Right, because if HR tells you to stop doing something, you stop doing
exactly.
it.
Exactly. But why?
Right.
Because they both exist within the overarching structure of the company, and the company has the ultimate power to terminate them.
They can fire you.
Right. But the OAH is dealing with private citizens and private corporations.
Oh.
As we are going to see, that assumption of voluntary compliance is exactly where the foundation of this entire legislative experiment begins to crumble.
Man. Okay, but before we get to the crumbling, I really want to paint a picture of what this machine looked like when it was first turned on and humming along perfectly.
It really was a marvel of administration for a while.
It was. We have this incredible primary source document, the 12th Annual Report of the Office of Administrative Hearings.
From 2007.
Yes, submitted in November 2007 to the governor, the president of the Senate, and the speaker of the House. It was authored by the OAH director at the time, a guy named Cliff J. Vanell.
Right.
And when you read through this report, you can just feel the absolute radiating pride they had in this system. Director Vanell literally uses the phrase revolutionary system of adjudication to describe the inclusion of these HOA disputes.
And frankly, you can totally understand his pride when you look at the sheer, staggering scale of the operation he was running.
It was huge.
The OAH wasn't just some tiny, dark office in a basement dealing with a few angry neighbors arguing over pet weight limits. It was a massive, high-speed adjudicative engine for the entire state of Arizona.
Just churning through cases.
Yeah, the 2007 report shows that in that fiscal year alone, they had 7,815 cases filed.
7,815 cases in a single year. That is a mind-boggling amount of bureaucratic heavy lifting.
It really is.
I mean, what are they even hearing all day?
It was everything. It wasn't just HOAs. The OAH was handling cases for dozens of major state agencies.
Like what?
Well, if a doctor was fighting a disciplinary action from the medical board, it went to the OAH.
Wow.
If a construction company was fighting the registrar of contractors over a revoked license, it went to the OAH. The Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System, the Department of Weights and Measures, the State Board of Nursing.
Is that for the nursing?
Yeah, the Peace Officer Standards and Training Board. The list of agencies filing their disputes into this single office is just endless. They were the centralized hub for almost all executive branch dispute resolution in the entire state.
And they were fast, like impossibly fast for a government agency. Their efficiency metrics are genuinely shocking.
They really like to brag about those numbers.
They did. They boasted a 97.77% completion rate for their dockets. And there is a line right in the executive summary of the report that says, through careful case management, the OAH enjoys no backlog.
No backlog at all.
Let me repeat that for anyone who has ever been to the DMV. A government agency dealing with nearly 8,000 complex legal disputes a year claimed to have absolutely no backlog.
It is the holy grail of public administration.
Seriously.
And to achieve that, the people actually running these hearings, the administrative law judges, were held to incredibly specific, rigorous standards.
Right. They had a whole philosophy about it.
They did. There's an article included in the appendix of this 2007 report titled The Administrative Law Judge, also written by Director Vanell. And it provides a deep dive into the underlying philosophy of how the OAH viewed its own authority.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because the term administrative law judge sounds very official, but it's a bit of a hybrid concept.
It is. The article highlights their absolute most critical mandate, the necessity of strict impartiality.
Okay.
To understand why this was such a big deal, you really have to look at how things worked before the OAH was created in the mid-90s. Back then, agencies often used their own internal employees or hire their own private contractors to hear disputes.
Wait, so if I had a fight with the Board of Nursing, the person deciding my case was literally just another employee of the Board of Nursing?
Exactly. It created an inherent, massive, and entirely understandable public perception of bias.
Oh, I bet.
You know, if you are an everyday citizen fighting the Registrar of Contractors and the judge literally gets their paycheck signed by the Registrar of Contractors, you are never ever going to feel like you received a fair shake.
No way. It is the classic fox guarding the hen house scenario.
Precisely.
Yeah.
We investigated ourselves and found we did nothing wrong.
Exactly.
So the OAH was created specifically to eliminate that bias by providing what the report calls a conscious detachment.
Conscious detachment. I like that phrase.
Right. The ALJs are entirely independent from the agencies. They have absolutely no relationship with the departments whose cases they are hearing.
Okay.
The report stresses over and over that rulings and case assignments are kept totally free of outside political or bureaucratic pressures.
That's reassuring.
And the ALJs are trained to be deeply patient. They are expected to be capable of dealing with unrepresented parties, meaning regular everyday citizens, who don't know a tort from a tortellini. And they are evaluated constantly by the state on their clarity, their neutral language, and their perceived fairness.
And it seems like the agencies they were serving actually respected this independence. There is a statistic in the report that frankly blew my mind.
Which one?
In 2007, agency acceptance of the administrative law judge's decisions without any modification whatsoever was 91.03%.
That is a phenomenal metric.
It is. It means that in over 9 out of 10 cases, these massive, powerful state bureaucracies just looked at the independent ALJ's ruling, even if the agency lost, and said, yep, that is the final word. We accept the decision.
Wow.
It paints a picture of a very well-oiled, highly respected machine.
It really does. It shows a system that, internally at least, within the confines of the executive branch, was functioning exactly as the legislature hoped it would.
Yeah.
But if you read closely within this very same 2007 report, there are subtle warnings.
Warning signs.
Yeah. Hints at the fundamental vulnerabilities of the system, specifically when it comes to these new, unique HOA disputes.
Yes, the warning label. In another article tucked away in the appendix of that 2007 report, titled Homeowner Petitions Against an Association, The OAH lays out the harsh realities for the citizens who are thinking about using this new shortcut.
They wanted to manage expectations.
Definitely. They heavily tout the speed, of course, noting that cases are generally resolved in under 90 days, which is lightning fast compared to waiting 2 years for a superior court trial.
Oh, absolutely.
But they also very clearly and very sternly highlight the economic risk.
What did they warn them about specifically?
They explicitly warn homeowners that if their petition is found to be unsubstantiated or invalid, they are going to lose their filing fee entirely.
Huh?
The OAH states that both the homeowner and the association have a significant economic interest in critically evaluating the true nature of their dispute before they enter the process.
So don't just file because you're mad.
Exactly. Essentially, they are saying, yes, this is a streamlined system, but it is not a consequence-free zone. Do not bring us your frivolous neighborhood drama.
And this brings us right to the edge of the cliff.
Okay.
This is the ultimate structural vulnerability of the entire OAH apparatus. As you look at all these incredibly impressive completion rates and the lack of a backlog and the 91% acceptance rate, there is a massive question that should be lingering in the back of your mind.
What's the question?
If an administrative law judge is ultimately just an employee of the executive branch and they are issuing these theoretically binding decisions on private citizens and private corporations like an HOA, where do they derive the actual physical power to enforce those decisions if a party simply decides to ignore them?
Right. Because when the Board of Nursing accepts a decision, they are part of the government. They play by government rules.
Exactly.
But an HOA is just a bunch of neighbors with a corporate charter. If the HR department tells you to apologize to your coworker and you just look them in the eye and say, no, make me, what is HR going to do?
Right.
They can fire you, sure. They can cut off your paycheck. But an ALJ can't fire a homeowner from their own house. What is the mechanism of actual undeniable force?
Precisely. The OAH can hold a hearing. They can review evidence. They can issue a beautifully written, perfectly reasoned order.
Yeah.
They can state definitively the HOA must reimburse this fee, or the homeowner is allowed to keep that specific type of tree in their front yard.
Right.
But they are essentially relying on voluntary compliance. They are assuming the HOA will read the order and say, well, the government has spoken, we must obey.
But what happens when an entity calls their bluff?
Yeah.
What happens when an HOA president just takes the ALJ's official state-sanctioned order and throws it directly into the shredder?
Well, wait, let's back up. Hold on.
Okay.
How does an entire state legislature, presumably filled with lawyers and seasoned politicians, draft a bill, pass it into law, have the governor sign it and run it for a decade without realizing they legally gave a government agency zero actual power? Did nobody check this?
Well, they thought they did check it.
They did.
Yeah. They thought they built a mechanism with teeth. They knew that you can't just have an administrative judge issuing polite suggestions to angry homeowners and stubborn HOA boards.
Right. That wouldn't work.
So in the statutory language, specifically Arizona Revised Statute 41-2198.02.B, the legislature included a very powerful, very specific phrase.
What does it say?
They wrote into the law that the order issued by the administrative law judge is enforceable through contempt of court proceedings.
Ah. Contempt of court. That sounds incredibly serious.
It is. When I hear contempt of court, I think of a red-faced judge banging a wooden gavel, screaming at someone to sit down, and then sending a bailiff over to put them in handcuffs and drag them to a holding cell.
That cinematic image you have in your head is entirely accurate.
Really? Handcuffs?
Yes. But contempt of court is the ultimate hammer in the American legal system. It is the raw power to compel obedience to the state. If you defy a court order, a judge can sanction you financially, bankrupting you if necessary, or, crucially, they can adjudge you as criminal and incarcerate you. You can literally go to jail, lose your freedom for contempt.
That's terrifying.
It is. Because the stakes are so incredibly high, because it involves the direct deprivation of a citizen's liberty and property, the power of contempt is jealously, exclusively, and fiercely guarded by the judicial branch.
Which brings us to the fundamental divide at the heart of this entire deep dive. The executive versus the judicial.
Yes, the big clash.
Our sources heavily reference the Arizona Constitution here, and it's important to understand why. Specifically, they point to Article 3, which outlines the separation of powers.
Let's really break down Article 3, because it is the bedrock of this whole argument.
Okay.
Article 3 states that the departments of government, legislative, executive, and judicial shall be separate and distinct.
Separate and distinct.
And then it delivers the absolute rule. No one of such departments shall exercise the powers properly belonging to either of the others.
So the executive can't make the laws, the legislature can't arrest people, and the administrators can't act like judges.
Exactly. They have their lanes and they cannot cross them. And then you combine Article 3 with Article 6, Section 1 of the Arizona Constitution.
What does Article 6 do?
Article 6 is the section that formally vests all judicial power in the Integrated Judicial Department, meaning the Supreme Court, the Superior Court, the appellate courts.
Okay.
Furthermore, Article 6, Section 14.1 expressly states that the Superior Court shall have original jurisdiction over proceedings in which exclusive jurisdiction is not vested by law in another court.
Okay, let me synthesize this because I want to make sure I'm grasping the sheer absurdity of the trap the legislature built here.
Go for it.
The core legal paradox is this. The OAH is an executive branch agency. They are administrators. They are bureaucrats.
Right.
They are absolutely constitutionally not a court under Article 6. Therefore, they absolutely cannot possess the power of contempt of court. They cannot send you to jail. They cannot levy criminal sanctions for defying their administrative orders.
That is correct. They structurally lack the constitutional authority to do so.
But the legislature wrote a statute saying their orders are enforceable by contempt. So what did the OAH do about this contradiction? Did they just pretend they had the power?
No, and this is where it gets tragic for the consumer. The OAH knew exactly what their limitations were. They weren't hiding it at all.
They weren't.
In that very same 2007 annual report, in the section outlining their brand new responsibilities regarding HOA disputes, they included a checklist to guide both homeowner and association.
Oh, wow.
And they put the truth right there in black and white for the public to read. They wrote, OAH has no authority for contempt proceedings or enforcement of prior decisions.
Wait, they publicly admitted they couldn't enforce their own rulings.
Yes, but then right after that admission, they gave the homeowner a very specific step-by-step instruction on what to do when an HOA ignores them.
What did they tell them?
They published this. However, failure by a party to comply with a decision issued by the OAH may result in the other party seeking enforcement of the administrative law judge's decision through a contempt of court proceeding in superior court.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Do you see the trap that has just been set for the average citizen here? If you are listening to this and you live in an HOA, you should be terrified right now, because let me summarize what this actually means in practice.
It's unbelievable.
The state legislature passes a law. The government looks you, the homeowner, right in the eye and says, hey, the Superior Court is way too expensive and complicated. Don't go there. Go to our special executive branch shortcut, the OAH. It's cheaper. It's faster. It's built just for you.
Exactly.
So you follow the rules. You pay your filing fee. You go through the entire hearing process. You submit your evidence. You argue your case. And you win.
You did it.
The independent administrative law judge issues a final binding order saying you are 100% right and the HOA is completely wrong.
You feel vindicated? The system worked perfectly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the HOA board, maybe they are just incredibly stubborn, or maybe they have a really expensive lawyer who knows how the game is actually played. They just look at your OAH order and they ignore it.
They do absolutely nothing.
Right? They don't reimburse your fee. They don't rescind the fine.
So what do you do?
So you, the angry homeowner, go back to the OAH and say, hey, the HOA is ignoring your binding order. Do something.
Right.
And the OAH, the agency that just took your money and ruled in your favor, throws up their hands and says, sorry, we are the executive branch. We have absolutely no constitutional authority to enforce our own orders.
We can't help you.
Right. We can't hold them in contempt, but don't worry. The state legislature wrote a specific statute that says our orders are enforceable in the superior court. So just take this piece of paper, walk down the street to the actual judicial branch, and ask the superior court judge to hold the HOA in contempt for you.
And there is the trap. The citizen, who is explicitly and forcefully told by the state to avoid the superior court to save money, is now forced by the very design of the alternative system to go to the superior court anyway, just to get the alternative system's ruling enforced.
It is maddening. And that required transition, that mandatory leap from the executive administrative system back into the judicial court system, is exactly the spot where the floor gave out underneath a man named R.L. Whitmer.
Okay, if this system was successfully churning out thousands of cases for a decade, how do we get from a theoretical constitutional vulnerability to a citizen actually being financially penalized?
That's the real tragedy here.
This brings us straight into the practical nightmare of the 2017 legal motion, We are moving from the macro level of constitutional theory down to the micro level of one citizen's agonizing fight against the Hilton Casitas Homeowners Association and its president, a man named Michael Bengtson.
Let's lay out the timeline for Whitmer, because the most crucial fact here is that he did everything exactly by the book.
He really did.
He didn't invent some crazy legal strategy. According to his motion, in September of 2014, Whitmer gets an administrative law order.
Okay.
He went through the entire OAH process we just described and emerged victorious with a piece of paper that legally proved he was in the right.
And we have to presume, based on the fact that he initiated subsequent legal action, that the Hilton Casitas HOA simply did not comply with whatever that 2014 order demanded of them.
Right. So Whitmer is holding this piece of paper, looking for a way to actually enforce it. What does he do? He goes to the internet. He looks up the official Arizona Office of Administrative Hearings website.
He just Googles it.
Yeah. And what does he find? He finds the exact instructions that the OAH has been publishing since that 2007 report we read.
The checklist.
The instructions that explicitly tell the public, failure by a party to comply may result in the other party seeking enforcement through a contempt of court proceeding in superior court.
He is simply a citizen following the published, public-facing administrative guidance of his own state government.
Yeah.
He does exactly what he is told. He takes his administrative order, he drafts a complaint, and he files it in the Superior Court of Maricopa County, seeking to enforce the executive order via judicial contempt proceedings.
And this is where the entire system completely breaks down and betrays him.
What happened?
The case gets assigned to the Honorable Amy L. Anderson in the Superior Court. And Judge Anderson does not enforce the order. She doesn't hold the HOA in contempt. Instead, the court dismisses Whitmer's petition entirely.
She just throws it out.
Yeah. The judge claims the Superior Court simply lacks the jurisdiction to enforce the administrative order of an executive agency.
Which, constitutionally speaking, based on a strict interpretation of Article 3 and Article 6, the judge might believe is entirely accurate.
Wait, really?
Well, yeah. The judicial branch doesn't exist to act as the muscle for the executive branch's internal bureaucracies. They are separate and distinct.
But then comes the absolute shocker. It wasn't just a dismissal. The court doesn't just send Whitmer home empty-handed. Judge Anderson actually awards attorney fees to the HOA.
It is a truly stunning outcome.
It's unbelievable.
The homeowner who followed the state's instructions is ordered to pay the legal bills of the HOA that ignored the state's binding ruling.
I'd be livid.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you really have to look at the incredibly complex legal acrobatics that led the judge to that dismissal. This is where Whitmer's subsequent filing, his motion to vacate judgment and grant a new trial, becomes an absolute masterclass in constitutional pushback.
Yeah, let's unpack Whitmer's counterattack. Because he didn't just take the loss and write a check. He fired back with a devastatingly logical legal argument.
He wasn't going down without a fight.
No. Whitmer argues in his motion that the Superior Court's judgment was based on what he flatly calls a bogus assertion by the defendants, the HOA lawyers.
The HOA's lawyers essentially argued to Judge Anderson that the Superior Court didn't need to get involved and shouldn't get involved because the OAH already had the power to issue contempt orders themselves.
Wait, what?
The lawyers claimed that an administrative law judge could just use the Arizona Rules of Civil Procedure to issue a contempt order over their own administrative orders. To back this up, they specifically cited an administrative rule of procedure, R219-102C.
Let me stop and make sure I understand the sheer audacity of the HOA's argument here.
It's pretty bold.
The HOA is saying to the Superior Court judge, hey, don't bother wasting your precious judicial time on this. The administrative judge over in the executive branch can just handle the contempt charges themselves using their own procedural rule book.
Precisely. They argued that a rule of procedure granted the agency constitutional power. And this is exactly where Whitmer's argument zeroes in on the vital legal concept of usurpation. And his logic is brilliant.
Usurpation. I need a metaphor for usurpation because it sounds like a Game of Thrones plot line.
It does sound medieval, right? Okay. It's like an HOA board passing a local neighborhood bylaw that says they now have the authority to issue speeding tickets on the interstate highway. It doesn't matter if the board votes on it unanimously. It doesn't matter if they print it out beautifully and put it in their official neighborhood rule book. They structurally lack the constitutional and statutory authority to police a state highway.
Right.
The state legislature didn't give them that power. You simply cannot invent jurisdiction by writing a procedural rule.
That makes total sense. You can't just declare yourself powerful.
Exactly. And Whitmer backs this up by citing fundamental case law. he brings in General Electric Company v. Burton, which is a major Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals case.
Okay.
This case establishes a core non-negotiable tenet of American administrative law. An administrative agency can only exercise the specific, limited power explicitly granted to it by the legislature in its enabling statutes.
Whitmer quotes the General Electric case directly in his motion, and it's a great quote. He writes, "Any excursion by an administrative body beyond the legislative guidelines is treated as an usurpation of constitutional powers vested only in the major branch of government."
What Whitmer is explaining to the court is that rules of procedure are exactly that. They dictate how a proceeding is administered.
Like the logistics.
Yeah, they dictate how many days you have to file a paper or what font size to use. They do not and cannot dictate what actual powers an agency possesses.
Right.
As Whitmer powerfully states, if ALJs, who are employees of the executive branch, interpreted a mere rule of procedure to expand their jurisdiction to include the power of contempt of court, they would clearly be usurping the constitutional powers explicitly vested in the legislature and the judiciary by Article 3 of the Arizona Constitution.
It is like the HR department writing a memo that says, according to our updated employee handbook guidelines, we now have the authority to sentence you to 6 months in the county jail.
Perfect analogy.
It does not matter what you write in your handbook. You simply do not have the structural authority to lock someone up. The power of contempt belongs to the courts, period. The legislature knew that, which is why the original statute literally said the OAH order is enforceable through contempt of court proceedings. And the OAH itself knew that, which is why they explicitly told people on their website to go to the Superior Court.
And Whitmer reinforces this undeniable reality by pointing out that even the acting director of the OAH at the time, a man named Greg Hanchett, adamantly confirmed Whitmer's understanding.
Oh, the director backed him up.
He did. Hanchett went on the record and stated, there is nothing in OAH's enabling statutes that would enable OAH to enforce its own decisions through contempt proceedings. He confirmed that administrative tribunals only have the powers specifically prescribed by statute. They cannot conjure the power to jail people out of thin air.
So the Superior Court seemingly accepted a fundamentally flawed, almost insulting argument from the HOI's lawyers in order to dismiss the case.
It certainly looks that way.
But the injury to Whitmer goes so much deeper than just getting his case dismissed. Let's look at the financial punishment, these completely unjustified sanctions.
The fees.
Yeah, the court awarded attorney fees and costs to the HOA under a few different Arizona revised statutes, or ARS. Specifically, ARS 12341, ARS 12349, and Rule 11.
This is where the bureaucratic trap violently snaps shut on the citizen's wallet. Let's break those down. ARS 12341 and 12341.01 generally relate to recovering legal costs and actions arising out of a contract dispute.
A contract dispute, but this wasn't a contract dispute.
Exactly. But Whitmer points out quite accurately by citing another case called Brown v. Terra Vita Community Association,
right,
that his action isn't a contract dispute. He isn't suing over breach of contract. He is seeking the enforcement of a state statute.
Yeah.
So legally speaking, those contract statutes shouldn't even apply to his motion.
But the really egregious one, the one that should make every listener furious, is the award under ARS 12349.
Oh, this one is rough.
I want to read the four prerequisites for this specific statute because they really highlight the Kafkaesque absurdity of this entire situation. Under Arizona Revised Statute 12349, a court can legally award attorney fees if an attorney or a party does one of four very specific things.
Okay, let's hear them.
One, brings or defends a claim without substantial justification. Two, brings or defends a claim solely or primarily for delay or harassment. Three, unreasonably expands or delays the proceeding. Or four, engages in an abuse of discovery.
The operative phrase we need to focus on there is the first one, without substantial justification.
How in the world can a citizen be sanctioned for bringing a claim without substantial justification when they literally, step by step, followed the published instructions provided by the Arizona government?
It's mind-boggling.
Whitmer states it perfectly in his motion. Petitioner brought this action in good faith and followed the instructions given by the Arizona Office of Administrative Hearings to the public. He even provides the judge with the exact web address where those precise instructions are still actively instructing the public to do exactly what he did.
Let's also touch on Rule 11, because it's a famous rule in legal circles, and having it used against you is severe.
What does Rule 11 do?
Rule 11 of the Rules of Civil Procedure essentially requires that any pleading or motion filed in court must be grounded in fact and warranted by existing law. It is designed to punish lawyers and parties who file utterly frivolous, baseless lawsuits just to harass people.
So the judge is basically calling Whitmer a troll.
Yes. The judge is officially declaring that Whitmer's attempt to enforce a valid government order using the exact method prescribed by the government was a frivolous, legally baseless act of harassment worthy of financial penalty.
Wow.
It is a profound, almost unimaginable failure of the system's internal logic.
Let me make sure I have the sequence of this bureaucratic nightmare correct.
Let's hear it.
The executive branch tells the citizen to go to the judicial branch for enforcement.
Right.
The citizen goes to the judicial branch.
Yes.
The judicial branch says, we don't have jurisdiction over the executive branch's orders, and furthermore, you are filing a frivolous lawsuit for even asking us to look at this. And then the citizen is punished financially, forced to pay the lawyers of the HOA that broke the rules in the first place, all for navigating the exact pathway designed by the state legislature.
That is the exact sequence of events.
It is maddening. It makes my blood boil just reading it. You do exactly what you were told by the institutions that hold the power, and you are the one who gets penalized.
Yep, you're left holding the bag.
And this brings us to what I think is the conceptual climax of this entire deep dive, because as you read Whitmer's legal motion, you realize it isn't just about him getting his money back or fighting a specific annoying HOA. It exposes a massive systemic threat.
Yes, exactly. We are moving from the very real personal injury of R.L. Whitmer to the massive macro implications for every single homeowner in the state of Arizona who thought they finally had a reliable mechanism for consumer protection.
So what does this all mean for the system? If we take the Superior Court's ruling against Whitmer to its logical, inevitable conclusion, we arrive at a terrifying paradox of recourse.
Let's trace the inescapable logic of Judge Anderson's dismissal. The Superior Court has essentially ruled that it does not have the jurisdiction to enforce the administrative orders of the OAH via contempt proceedings. That door is closed.
Right.
We have also established, constitutionally, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the OAH, as an executive branch entity, absolutely cannot hold contempt powers themselves without unconstitutionally usurping the power of the judicial branch. That door is also closed.
So if the real court won't enforce the order and the administrative court legally can't enforce the order, then the orders of the administrative law judges are completely 100% unenforceable.
Completely useless.
They are nothing but pieces of paper with a fancy state government logo printed on them. They have absolutely no actual power to compel anyone to do anything.
That is the terrifying, inescapable conclusion of this legal black hole. It represents the total quiet collapse of the entire consumer protection apparatus that the state legislature spent years building.
And Whitmer highlights this brilliantly, almost desperately, in his closing argument to the judge. He says that if the court rules this way, if it does not vacate its judgment and recognize its jurisdiction, it has effectively rendered the entire statute ARS 32-2199 at 6 meaningless without any means of enforcement.
Meaningless.
It completely evaporates the legislative intent, which we talked about at the very beginning of this deep dive. The entire intent was to resolve these community disputes without the expense and formality of a superior court trial.
It is a devastating critique of the judicial decision, because if Whitmer is right about the implications, you have a massive bureaucratic machine, the OAH, churning through nearly 8,000 cases a year, loudly boasting about 97% completion rates, happily taking in filing fees from citizens to fund their own existence, issuing what they call binding orders.
And none of it actually matters.
None of it is real. If an HOA board simply decides they just don't feel like listening, the entire multi-million-dollar system is revealed to be nothing more than a theater of justice, an illusion sustained entirely by the voluntary compliance of the parties involved.
Whitmer even takes it a step further in his motion, and I love this part. He suggests, with perhaps a touch of very warranted bitter sarcasm, that as a public service, if the Superior Court is going to deny his motion, the judge should really take it upon herself to officially notify the state legislature, the Arizona Department of Real Estate, and the Office of Administrative Hearings that their administrative law judge's orders have just been ruled effectively unenforceable by the judicial branch.
It is a bold, highly unusual, and necessary statement to make in a legal filing.
It takes guts.
It does. He is forcing the judicial branch to look at the systemic wreckage caused by their strict jurisdictional interpretation. He is essentially saying, if you are going to break the entire alternative justice system that the legislature built, you should probably tell the people running it so they stop charging innocent citizens filing fees for a service that doesn't actually exist.
Right.
It demands that the branches of government stop operating in silos, communicate with one another, and reconcile this impossible trap they have collectively built.
This has been an incredible, infuriating journey. We started with the most relatable thing in the world. The desire for a cheaper, faster way to fight an unreasonable homeowners association over something small.
A trash can.
Right, a trash can or a mailbox. And the state legislature had great intentions. They really wanted to help regular people. They built this massive, highly efficient executive shortcut in the form of the OAH.
They really tried.
But somewhere along the line, the structural constitutional realities of how power actually works in America were glossed over. And we ended up in this jurisdictional black hole where executive rules and judicial powers cancel each other out, and the citizen, the very person the law was explicitly designed to protect, is left holding the bag, facing court sanctions just for trying to follow the government's own rules.
It is crucial to remember, as we wrap up our analysis, that we have been deeply examining this entirely from the perspective presented in Whitmer's own motion and the state's internal reports.
Right.
We are examining the architecture of his legal argument, which, as we've discussed, is structurally sound, highly logical, and constitutionally compelling. We aren't necessarily taking a definitive side on the ultimate wisdom of the Superior Court's final ruling. Courts have their own incredibly complex jurisdictional mandates and precedents they must follow. And we aren't privy to the judge's internal deliberations.
Okay.
But what we are doing is illuminating the impossible Kafkaesque paradox that a regular citizen was forced to navigate based entirely on the public record and published instructions.
And it leaves us with a lot to think about regarding how our systems of government are built and who actually pays the price when those systems fail to talk to each other.
It absolutely does. And I want to leave you with this final lingering thought to mull over.
Go ahead.
In our modern society, we constantly demand that government become more efficient. We want it to act more like a streamlined business, to cut red tape, to eliminate bureaucracy.
Yeah, you hear that all the time.
That desire for efficiency is exactly why the OAH was given this power over HOA disputes in the first place, to be fast, cheap, and cost effective. But we have to ask ourselves, when we strip away the slow, expensive, and often deeply frustrating formalities of the traditional court system in the name of efficiency, do we accidentally strip away the very foundational power needed to ensure that justice is actually enforced?